Chapter 7. She left her car in the packed parking lot of the Lehman's and walked home in the warm darkness. Every last reporter had gone. There was a black van with smoked windows and diplomatic plates parked across from her house, probably a spillover from the Lehman bash. Entering, she cut the main lights to avoid interest and repeated her New York conference lie into the answering machine. A growing sense of vulnerability was getting on her nerves. Moving distractedly about the house, she found herself obsessively checking the street, gazing into the darkened driveway. A freak gust of wind sent twigs hurling by a lamppost. Everything alarmed her. She peered into the road at the shiny black van parked by the curb. Was it bad suspension, or something more sinister that caused that gentle roll? "What are the kids doing in there?" she said aloud, going for a silly compromise to soothe her overwrought mind. The networks barely mentioned the Georgetown massacre. Without visual impact, it never amounted to more than an appendix to the superior footage from the Union Station bombing. The murder of Alexei Rykov got tangled up with a gang fight over prostitution. Lieutenant Patrick Miller of the Metropolitan Police told the press that a conflict had led to a bungled drive-by shooting. A helpful anchorman found this well-suited for a punchline about the ailing capital. Caroline silenced the wailing ambulances. The telephone purred on the cherrywood sideboard. The machine had run out of memory and was no longer dealing with incoming calls. At the best of times, she seldom returned calls unless they were important to work. Those were the means by which she managed her life. Few bothered to try, and that was fine with her. She had no patience with people making demands on her time. She had never called anybody for comfort. If there ever was a need, she knew she'd face the first law of thermodynamics. You cannot withdraw what you have not deposited. She had never lent a shoulder for others to cry on. Her account was empty. It took serious effort to calm her distraught psyche. Whom can you turn to when you can't trust your mind? If this was a mental breakdown, could she impose intellect to resolve the problem? Her hallucinations had felt like memories. She knew they were not. Svetaeva's responses signaled something other than post-traumatic stress. Maybe the kid was hooked on drugs. Dating old Dan indicated expensive habits. Could she blame the poor thing for misunderstanding after her unprovoked attack? Caroline sat listlessly and wondered if she would ever feel alive again, like with Robert. He was provocative, witty, and never demanding, not even on the lecture circuit or their travels abroad. The physical part of their bond was never dominating. They were two of a kind, pushing on in their field, endlessly talking to colleagues. The talk was great, mostly on cellular mutation. They never got to see the sights. In Venice, they knew the canals by the stink. They knew the restaurants by topics discussed over forgotten meals or by bills kept for expenses. That look today across a crowded hospital reception, the fleeting gaze of a handsome federal agent. She felt a sudden loss. What would it be like to fondle a man after all this time? She tried to resist the thought of a lover. Smooth skin on a hard body. Did her fawn have anything to offer but the pleasures of the flesh? She tried to think of Robert. Recalling a body moving against hers by the open window of a darkened hotel. As four eyes roamed out across murky waters in slow pleasure. An unlit canal in Venice. She missed that part of her life so deeply it hurt. Robert was everything the federal agent was not, and vice versa. In the bedroom, she made a detour for strength, to touch the face of her framed husband. ashamed of her thoughts. Maybe it was fear. She was touched by that old chill, the sensitivities of youth, that unspeakable fear of the unknown, searching every shadowy corner and listening for the signs of movement. She would have to shore up her defences. Feeling bone-tired, Caroline decanted red port into a cut crystal glass on a polished silver tray. A couple of glasses made her drowsy. She knew the reporters would lie in wait for her tomorrow at Georgetown Hospital. She would be hounded by a vengeful press for shaking them off. She rubbed her skin with a coarse Turkish towel after the steamy shower and enjoyed the sensuous feeling of skin open and heavy. It did not reclaim the intimacy lost with her husband. She studied her face in the surround light from the bedroom mirror, a dangerous trait. She always liked what she saw. No spring chicken, but beautiful, her fawn had offered. The world had changed since her youth, especially for the young generation. Unbroken spirits were in short supply. Looking back on her life, she wanted Mary to find the urge to engage with the world. God knew there were enough problems to solve. The Church of Science protected their turf by using complexity to blur the big picture. It intimidated the young, cheated them out of their birthright. When you put up hurdles against youthful curiosity, you allow leaders to harness strength for hidden agendas, the biggest game in town. Caroline tried to immerse her mind in these abstract thoughts to keep that other ugly strand at bay. It was scary to suspect your own mind of duplicity. Even her sexual confusion at Lehman's was deeply upsetting, imagined or not. She wondered if she could seduce her fawn. Was she still able to perform these acts? She put on silk pajamas and paced the floor in dread, heart jumping at every sound. "The tree, stupid," she told the living room as a rasping sound carried through the house. That damn branch was rubbing against the drainpipe again. It was too early for sleep. By her desk in the study, sipping port in the half dark, she studied her three small handwritten pages of formulas from yesterday. Why had she laid them out in the wrong order, the last page on top? "That's a bit cavalier, mixing up the math." She shook her head, trying to make the rearranged pages into an accidental mistake. "Don't do this," she begged of her mind. The order of the pages would not be clear to an amateur. Somebody had gone through her papers. Was he still in her house? She blinked in sudden alarm as she spotted it. The desk slot that held the file on Robert's cancer was empty. Her privately compiled, by now extensive data, on his mysterious tumour was not there. These tumours were normally linked to direct doses of heavy radiation. The file was gone. That threw her. That, and the horrible thought of Robert asleep with Svetlana as she released the radiation shield. She flinched from a shadow that moved across the curtain in her study, but forced a sustained look until another sheaf of leaves danced into the streetlight. A car door slammed. This was not going to be an easy night. When another hurried gulp of port did little to soften the shiver, she put the empty glass down so high-handedly it almost cracked. It was hard to fight aberrations with rationale. The perverse white-knuckled panic snuck up and overwhelmed her. She fled into the bedroom where a bedside lamp cast its warm light on the pillows. The familiar stacks of research literature soothed her. In the dead stillness, she burrowed under the covers as an indefinable fear spread through her, spilling into open alarm, growing like a cancerous tumour. a fascist mutation as advanced cells prowled her bloodstream. A minute later, in epileptic frenzy, she flung off the covers to sprint across the darkened hallway and down the stairs again. She ran the short distance to her dining room, where she stopped, panting inside the doorway to blink away darkness. She peered hard until she made out the high-backed chair, the glint of a glass eye. Yes, she was there. Caroline snatched the smiling rag doll to her bosom and raced back to the bedroom to dive under the covers a second time. Hugging the doll fiercely, she pulled the covers over her head. Babushka was the only one she could protect in this house, and with a child to protect, a mother could withstand any evil, ward off any fear. "Don't be afraid. Mummy's here," she whispered under the covers. It was a controlled, soothing voice. It was still early evening, out in the dark street. The black van glittered ominously. Later that night, the wind died down. The trees grew silent. In her bedroom, holding the arm of a smiling rag doll, Caroline is asleep. The reading lamp is on, the covers on the floor. Face down in a strange bed, she raises her head to the view from an open window, eyes roaming the dark waters of an unlit Venice canal, dreaming. She listens to the water lap at the wall beneath their window. By the hushed murmur of the bedsprings, she melts into Robert's body moving in her. Caroline moans and turns over on her bed, holding on to the rag doll. Then there's a change of setting. A man with a lion's mane steps out from behind the great oak. An aide jumps to open the limousine door. A grey head ducks into a grey car. And then Rykov is dreaming through older eyes, walking that young Dr. Glyn Griffith down the winding path. "There must be a misunderstanding." He lets go of Babushka's arm to study young Caroline. The plan is in place, but there is a rumble from a distant explosion. He runs from her out of the gate. His painful breathing is a drumbeat. Two hollow shots ring out. He punches Galina out of the way. Pavel is down on the asphalt on top of the other kid, running heavily towards the limousine. Only Babushka on his mind. Has his daughter been hit? Hoisting her limp body, he knows this is a wrong move. It's too late. What an astounding end, caught in a trap sprung by love. This is good, Caroline thinks in his mind. He cannot be all bad. What is this girl doing in his mind? He needs no redemption from her to wash away the achievements of an extraordinary life. His heart rises against her weakness. With a stupid stocking over his head, Kuznetsov takes careful aim, a traitor pissing his pants. If he fails, there's nowhere to hide from Alexei Ivanovich. This Ukrainian peasant isn't even Russian and thinks of himself as a poet. The monochrome vision is in slow motion. Rykov swivels his head to Boki, holstering his gun after killing Galina. This is his trusted man, now standing at ease behind the American doctor as he scurries towards her daughter, she too blinded by love. Boki no longer sees him as a threat. It does not take much to betray a man who gave you a life and protected your family. How much is loyalty worth? The art of betrayal is in the genes that corrupt all but steel. Rykov is pure steel. He tries to let go of Babushka, but it's too late. Kuznetsov had waited for this moment. He would inherit an empire. From the corner of an eye, he sees fire spit. His mind registers hollow spatter, but no sounds. The heavy kicks to his chest are the jolts of impact. The lead has already passed through Babushka. Thrown against the limousine grill, he drops the child. She tumbles to the ground. In the chrome, he spots the tortured reflection of a demoted general with a stocking over his head. Even now, the coward is unsure if his master can reach out. They had grown up with his power. The panic is clawing at his mind, tearing at him like the slugs in his chest. His time is up. The young American woman had given her word, a solemn pact for life and beyond. Steps were in place to secure her future.
"He killed my...
His old lungs ceased to breathe. It's less painful that way. He holds on to his last gasp of air to speak as the young doctor reaches for Babushka's head.
"Your daughter is dead."
It took character to say it simply. This young woman would be his arm. He fights for the words. There is no air. There is no time.
"Our pact. Remember. Touch me."
The splendid creature shies away.
"What?"
she whines. The panic in him explodes. He's angry. It keeps him from slipping away. There's no time to explain. No air to speak.
"Touch me."
Then he sees the sign. It's a powerful sign, the last vision of a long, spectacular life. Young, slender fingers reach to carry him over. He fights to focus, to gather the will to raise his hand to hers. His vision goes dark from the edges inwards, sucking all light into a central vortex. The bright point implodes into a brilliant spark of wonderful radiance, and then empty blackness. In bed, in her Tenley house, Caroline Glynn wakes up disoriented. The rag doll slips to the floor. The bulb on her reading lamp grows many times brighter and starts to whisper like an angry bee. It says, and goes out.
Shit!
It's pitch dark, but her misgivings have passed. Picking the covers from the floor, sweeping on a silk nightgown, she feels rested. In the living room, she tosses down a brimful of port and a solid gulp, refilling the glass. Strangely, the fear is gone. There's no room for fear if you are in total control. Caroline shakes her head and walks back into the dusky bedroom, where she flicks on the lights round the dressing table mirror. The night is young. The time had come to freshen up. Sliding onto the cushioned seat, she prepares a smile for a sleep-rumpled face in the mirror. As her reflection moves onto the glass, the massive shock makes it impossible to breathe. The top of her head glitters above the grey, well-groomed sideburns. The reflection in the mirror is that of an old man. The image of Alexei Ivanovich Rykov. In the mirror, Rykov shakes his head at the absurdity of the sight.
"Shit,"
says her voice.
"Shit,"
mouths the mask in the mirror. In shock, she shuts her eyes, half crouching, opening them to look down on tightly knit fingers on the dressing table. They are her hands. She sits down heavily and buries her head in these hands like a baby who wants the bad to go away. It took a while to dig up the courage for another look. What brought her round was the comical reflection lodged on her retina. A haggard old man in a pink nightgown. She shakes her head, forcing a second look. Her reflection is back to normal, all lit up, clear as day. Removing her hands from her eyes.
"That was worse than Hoover in drag," she murmurs to the mirror.
Following the lips, mouthing these words at her through the glass, forcing them to smile
at a simile she did not understand.
I'm cracking up.
The forced smile prevented the well-groomed mask from returning. She put on lipstick, sensing discomfort from an alter ego, pausing to sip port as she puts on a white bra and cotton trousers. The earrings and pearls looked lovely against her skin. As an act of defiance against the madness, she tried to concentrate her mind on target. Could Agent Carl Smith anchor her mind? Rummaging through her purse, she inspected the calling card he handed her at Georgetown Hospital.
I need a man, she whispered.
She called from her study to give the FBI operator the same message. As she walked across to pick up her Saab in the Lehman parking lot, she glanced at the diplomatic red, white, and blue plates of the black van. She knew, deep down, that despite its faulty suspension, what was in the works behind its shaded windows. The van implied no threat